Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I am John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, June 23rd, 2016. Some UN peacekeepers in South Sudan will be sent home following a report on the deadly attack in Malakal.
We absolutely take responsibility for our own actions and for the mission's response. And since then, we've been constantly reviewing our posture and putting mitigating and protective measures in place to improve the safety of the IDPs.
And the governor of one of the new states admits insecurity caused by the South Sudan Army is rampant in his state.
Soldiers, according to the witnesses, saw them coming from that area of Nazareth. They came to Haimahat, so they were shooting along the road that they were coming towards Haigonia, and they killed two. One is a teacher, the other one, I don't know his profession.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The spokesman for the United Nations Department of Peacekeeping Operations say the UN accepts responsibility for its lack of swift response during the February massacre of internally displaced persons in Malakal. Nick Banbak says UN peacekeepers from Ethiopia, Rwanda, and India did not respond quickly to protect civilians who were attacked at the UN protection of civilian sites in Malakal. He says the UN peacekeeping department will repatriate peacekeepers or their commanders who were on duty when gunmen killed 30 IDPs and injured 123 others. Banbak says the UN peacekeeping department has been investigating what happened in South Sudan in order to prevent it from happening again in future peacekeeping operations.
In the process of an inquiry, we look through what the systems that were in place and how those systems could be strengthened. But we also look at individual and unit responsibility. So UN peacekeeping is currently engaging directly with the concerned troop-contributing countries to address the underperformance of the UNMISS, that's the mission in South Sudan, the UNMISS uniform personnel, and that's including on suggestions of how to improve capabilities, training, and preparedness. And those discussions with the troops involved are going on currently, and there will be action taken, whether against individual units as a whole or against those in command of certain units.
Which contributing countries are in Malakal, based in Malakal?
So in Malakal, at the time of the incident, we had troops from Ethiopia, Rwanda, and India in Malakal.
Is the UN mission in South Sudan accepting responsibility for not protecting civilians during the attack in Malakal?
We absolutely take responsibility for our own actions and for the mission's response. And since then, we've been constantly reviewing our posture and putting mitigating and protective measures in place to improve the safety of the IDPs in a very challenging environment. That's exactly what taking responsibility means. I would also mention, though, that responsibility also rests with those that perpetrated the attack, and that's an important aspect of this as well.
In case there are people who might have been implicated, the peacekeepers, if they are peacekeepers or a commander of a unit who must have slept on the job during the incident, what will happen to such individual or individuals?
UN peacekeeping is committed to upholding the highest standards of conduct, and that includes operational conduct. And if we find that individual units responded inappropriately or we find that individual commanders did not live up to their command responsibilities, we will take action. We work with our troop contributing countries. We need them. We thank them for their service. We commend them for their bravery. But when something happens that involves a unit not responding the way that it needed to, it's logical that both us and the TCC, the troop contributing country in question, would take whatever action was necessary to make sure that that doesn't happen again. And that does include repatriation of individual units when appropriate and repatriation of commanders who did not live up to their responsibility.
And once these commanders are repatriated, are they going to be disciplined by their countries? Because if people died in Malakal, somebody ought to, account for it.
The ultimate responsibility for good conduct, order, and discipline inside of armed forces resides with the member state. We, as the United Nations, repatriate, we send them back, and we trust that the country, in line with their own national relevant laws, whether that's a code of military justice or other applicable national laws, will take the appropriate action necessary based on the case.
And in the case of Malakal, the peacekeepers there are operating under Chapter 7, meaning they have all the means to protect the civilians, be it use of force or, you know, fighting in defense. And that did not happen. Why?
You're absolutely right to point out that part of that mission's mandate is protection of civilians. I would point out that the mission did respond. Police personnel were deployed to the scene in order to try to prevent escalation of violence. When the clashes intensified, we responded with tear gas to try to disperse the groups. On the 18th of February, so the second day of the event, our armored personnel carriers and a platoon of our personnel directly engaged the armed attackers and eventually drove them out of the camp.
And how would you respond to critics who said your forces acted after 16 hours of carnage in the camp?
This is exactly what was being reviewed by these two processes, the Internal Board of Inquiry and the Special Investigation, both of which, I might add, were convened and commissioned by the United Nations. So we understand this incident happened. We took action to go and look into finding out exactly what happened, and we will take appropriate action with the troop contributing countries that were there as appropriate in light of the findings.
That's Nick Banbuck, spokesman for UN Department of Peacekeeping Operations. He was speaking to me from UN headquarters in New York earlier today. The governor of Wau State says Wau Town is experiencing rampant insecurity. Two people were killed by an unknown group of errant soldiers yesterday, and a police captain was shot and killed today. Governor Elias Y. Nyipoch has instructed security forces to respect the rule of law and apprehend suspected criminals to face justice. A teacher and another civilian were gunned down during Wednesday's attack in Wau, in which a group of armed men went into rampage, according to eyewitnesses. Steward Uchala is a family member of the slain teacher. He says the armed group dressed in SPLA uniform opened fire in front of his house. Uchala says the suspects took his brother's mobile phone and motorcycle. Speaking in Arabic, Uchala says his brother was killed by members of the South Sudan Army.
When George was rushing home, people told him that there is gunfire, but he said, "No, I am heading home to my family." Just as he reached home, the gunman was in the nearby shop. He was shot dead and his phones were all taken. Now we are taking him to the church and then for burial. All those who died were shot. My brother was shot in the head.
While State Governor Elias Y. Nyipoch confirms that two unarmed civilians were shot dead by armed military personnel.
Something like 8 or 7 soldiers, according to the witnesses, saw them coming from that area of Nazareth. They came to High Mahat, so they were shooting along the road that they were coming. They were coming towards Haigonia, and they killed two. One is a teacher, the other one, I don't know his profession, but they are young boys. They are in 20s. So the shooting continued until something like 8.
Governor Wyer says no suspects have ever been arrested in connection with previous shootings in the town by members of the South Sudan Army. Wyer also confirmed that several suspects who had been arrested for allegedly taking part in an earlier armed rampage have never been tried in court of law.
And I am still continuing looking at what is going wrong, especially in this state. Total breakdown of law and order. How many criminals that we have put in the police custody? Are they there? They're not there. Even those cattle keepers that killed several people in Busere, and they are brought under custody inside here because the scene of the crime is this state. They were supposed to be tried here. But are they there?
Wyer says on several occasions, the military has interfered with the work of the police. He says 6 motorcycles were stolen by armed group dressed in SPLA uniforms earlier this month. Wyer says His attempts to restore peace in Wau have been blocked by individuals who oppose to the rule of law. Reverend Bishop Moses Deng Bull of the Episcopal Church of Sudan in South Sudan in Wau condemns the latest insecurity in the state.
The situation in Wau for the last 1 week is not good at all. And as South Sudanese, we are not supposed to be in this kind of situation where we are inflicting a lot of suffering on ourselves. And we really condemn the situation which is in Wau.
Deng says communities of Wau state must engage in peaceful dialogue to find the root causes of insecurity in the state.
We really are appealing for calm, for peace, and then we turn to dialogue among the communities. Because most of this fighting and the conflict is actually based on rumors. And some of them are based on what you call stereotyping. And no one has the right to say he doesn't want any community in South Sudan. We have all the rights. We have equal rights. We should govern ourselves through the rule of law. And that is my appeal to everybody in Wau, that really we should stop what is going on now. And we turn to dialogue. Let us use dialogue as the best conflict resolution mechanism.
On Saturday night, a husband and wife were shot dead in their house. More than 5 motorcycles were also looted in a separate incident. The governor says there is an ongoing threat of an attack on Wau town residents by unknown gunmen. Several calls were made to South Sudan. I beg your pardon. South Sudan in Focus made several calls to the SPLA spokesman for comments, but he did not answer our call. This report was prepared by Dimo Silva Aurelio in Wau. Insecurity is not the only problem in South Sudan. Economic experts say South Sudan's hyperinflation rate could have a ripple effect on consumers and the business community across the country. Local and foreign traders in Juba are threatening to shut down their businesses because most consumers cannot afford to buy food. Reporter Tito Justin visited markets in Juba where prices of food items have shot up by more than 300%.
This is custom market in Juba where both local and foreign traders buy imported goods from neighboring Uganda, Kenya and Sudan. Juba traders then sell the goods in retail shops to Juba consumers. Idong Jaki is one of the local retailers. She sells tomatoes and onions. Today, most of Jaki's items are out of stock because she cannot afford the prices offered by Ugandan traders. Jaki says she used to buy a sack of vegetables for £50, but today she says one sack of vegetables cost 500 South Sudanese pounds. She says she is operating at a loss because wholesale traders have hiked food prices.
This business is now not doing well. There is no market. Poor people cannot eat now. Before, when a bundle was 1 SSP, everybody was eating. But now poor people can't eat, and a bundle with 5 SSP is also very small, and that is not enough for people at home.
Grace Batista is a government employee. She came to buy vegetables from Jackie to feed her family of 8. Grace says her monthly salary is 600 South Sudanese pounds, or about $12. She says she has not received her salary since April. Speaking in Arabic, Grace is asking authorities in Juba to address the economic crisis in the country.
Better let the government look for us ways to solve this issue, because our salary is little and is not enough. Let them increase our pay, because this 600 SSP per month is not doing anything for us.
In Juba market, Susan Ladusoka runs a restaurant. She says most customers cannot afford the prices of food on her menu. Susan used to sell a plate of food at 15 to 20 South Sudanese pounds, but now she is forced to charge 80 to 100 South Sudanese pounds per plate. Speaking in Arabic, she says traders are forced to charge higher prices because of the scarcity of foreign currency for importing food items from Kenya and Uganda.
I want to say that let the government look at the market. Let the Americans look at the market, because this dollar will destroy South Sudan completely. There's nothing for us now. We don't even have anything. Now women are staying at home. Is this good when people stay at home and businesses are shutting down?
Foreign traders say doing business in South Sudan can be expensive because of the multiple taxes traders pay to the government of South Sudan. Ugandan businessman Masarika Brian sells shoes at Custom Market. Brian says he worries about the future of his business, adding that sales have dropped dramatically compared to 2 years ago.
The business has gone down totally because of the dollar. And we find that we have no more buyers that are buying. If there is any change, I can have a future for my business. But there's no change, there's no future.
Teachers, judges and university lecturers are all on an open strike over months of unpaid salaries and allowances. Teachers say their monthly salary is not enough to allow them to put food on the table for their families. South Sudan Presidential Advisor on Economic Affairs says the country is broke. Agri-teacher Sabun admits the economic crisis in South Sudan is affecting those who depend on government salaries.
Waiting for months on end without paying salaries to a population that less understands why the situation is like that can even be dangerous to the employees themselves and even to government institutions. So it's a question of striking a balance.
The government has promised to pay striking employees in the near future. South Sudan inflation rate is now the highest in the world. Last week, the American magazine Business Insider reported that fixing the country's economy will take years. For VOA News, I am Tiro Justin in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, residents of Yambio Town receive a gift from the French ambassador to South Sudan. We will tell you what it is after this.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
is it difficult for you to find a job?
For now, through sports, it's difficult. Number one, because you have to be exposed. You have to play a lot of games to get the exposure outside there for the relevant institutions to maybe scout you.
It's not easy. Maybe for the interest of those people who are inside, they may allow you for interview. And at the same time, as a lady, you can face challenges. Although you are accepted to work with these people, still you will face challenges.
When you go to offices to find a job, most of them need a certain period of experience, of which so many people have not accomplished yet.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. Residents of Raja are gradually returning home from the bush following last weekend's deadly attack on the town. Unknown gunmen looted shops, the Ivory Bank and Raja Hospital. Most residents who have been returning home say they have no food or medicine. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports from Wau.
The attackers, who are believed to be South Sudanese, chased state officials and residents out of Raja town. During and after the attack, humanitarian agencies evacuated local and international staff. Maria Santino is one of the residents who returned to her home in Raja town. Speaking in Arabic, she says she cannot get hold of the medicine she needs. Honestly, she says there is no medicine. Maria says she went there to take Panadol for first aid for herself, but she says there is no medicine. Dr. Vincent Taban runs Raja Civil Hospital. Dr. Taban says the health situation in Raja is deteriorating quickly.
What happened was that the drug store was broken in, and then in the beginning, a few medicines were taken, and then in the aftermath, some more armed groups came in. They almost looted all the drugs, all the medical supplies, and whatever we have in the drug store down there. There was Land Cruiser, half of Land Cruiser, were also taken. The ambulance was taken as well. Solar panels were fixed in the hospital to make sure there is a condition and power supply within the hospital. All the solar panels were removed. A lot of distractions, including the inpatient beds within the hospital, were all taken.
Dr. Taban says there is an urgent need for medical workers to treat children dying from preventable diseases like malaria. He says most of the medical personnel have been evacuated from the area, leaving hundreds of residents at risk of dying to fend for themselves.
To talk about the general health situation currently in Raja, I can describe as being critical. because we have some latest reports that we have children who are sick. There are no medical personnel, and even if there are some few medical personnel who are available, what they are lacking are the drugs, the medicine, and the other medical supplies so that they can combat the cases.
Taban is calling for a joint effort by humanitarian agencies to address the critical medical needs in Raja.
It needs a multi-sectoral effort to make sure that the situation comes back to normal. And we acknowledge what IMC has been doing in Raja and also HealthMed TPO. And also in the sector of nutrition, there is an organization called AFOR, the Action for Development. They've been doing very well, but when the strike, came to the town, almost most of their properties were looted.
Raja County Commissioner Alamin Janga says even though many displaced persons are returning to the town, food remains a big challenge because most homes and markets were looted by the unidentified gunmen. Last week's fighting left more than 50 people dead, including 7 bodyguards of Governor Rizik Zakaria Hassan. Dozens of others were wounded. The ICRC evacuated 17 wounded residents for treatment at Awil Hospital. Local officials in Raja say the attackers opposed the establishment of Lol Estate, but Rizik accused the SPLA-IO for attacking Raja. The SPLM-IO spokesman adamantly denied Governor Zakaria's charges. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Wau.
Teachers and students in Yambio Town are welcoming a donation of French books by the French ambassador to South Sudan this week. The donation is aimed at improving the ability of students to speak French. French Ambassador Jean-Pierre Rose says it is important for Gudwe State students to learn French because the state borders French-speaking Democratic Republic of Congo and Central Africa Republic. Gift Friday has more for VOA from Yambio.
Monsieur, comment tu t'appelles?
Je m'appelle Emmanuel Yang.
Ok, merci. Quant à moi, je m'appelle pour passer une émission à Bokundo. Comment ça va?
Ça va bien.
16-year-old Athanasio Boniface is a primary 7 pupil at Gracia Nursery and Primary School in Yambio. Athanasio says he likes learning a foreign language. He says learning French will give him more employment opportunities at international organizations in the future.
We are very happy even it will even promote us. French is very important because when we go to other countries, like in France there, we also speak French there. I know bonjour, comment ça va, comment tu t'appelles, quel âge as-tu?
He says the new books will help students improve their knowledge of French. 14-year-old Paite Lois also takes French classes at Gracia Nursery and Primary School in Yambio. She says she enjoys learning the languages of neighboring countries.
I like it and I'm practicing it because to know the language for the countries which are our neighbors.
She's encouraging other students in the state to join her school to learn and speak French. Innocent Bokindo, a French teacher at Gracia Nazarene Primary School in Yambio, says the new books are a big help.
We are very happy because for me now I have only 3 or 4 books. That is not enough, but I'm very happy to see that he gave us many books.
French teacher Gabambiri Mori says he has been impressed with his students' knowledge of French.
The way that our pupils talk last time, even Ambassador was very happy to hear the small pupils, even 5 years, are talking French. So I understand that our pupils from Gracia are speaking French very well.
Maurice is one of the 5 teachers who attended training in France last year. He says French teachers in Gudwe State are waiting for the State Minister of Education to open a French cultural center to help students and teachers interested in learning more about French. French Ambassador to South Sudan, Jean-Yves Rose, says his embassy is interested in helping Gudwe State residents learn how to speak French.
Good for South Sudan. And in particular, in this southwest area of South Sudan, where there is proximity, there are historical links with the people from DRC and from CIR that should create and that will create opportunities to better know, because it's better to have good friends, to have more friends. It's always better to have more friends. But also, it will create opportunities for development, for jobs, and also for peace.
The ambassador says his country is working on projects to develop the capacity of teachers in Gbudwe State to teach French language in schools across South Sudan. The Gbudwe State Minister of Education says there are 27 French teachers in the state and welcomes the French government's initiative to train more teachers in the former Western Equatorial State. Gift Friday for VOA News, Yambio.
I guess we need some French classes here as well. Moving on, South Sudan has been described by some as a powerhouse for athletics. Here in US, many young South Sudanese are taking advantage of their natural strength and ability by strapping their basketball shoe and hitting the courts in hopes of following the footsteps of the late professional US National Basketball Association player Manud Ball, as well as Miami Heat All-Star Lual Deng. But as Ayen Bior reports, the chances of getting selected to play for college are slim and making the pros even tougher.
For a talented basketball player in high school, getting a scholarship to play college basketball is the goal that's on your mind every day. But the stakes are high. The National Collegiate Athletic Association, or NCAA, says only about 2% of high school athletes are awarded athletic scholarships to compete in college. And of the student athletes participating in sports with professional leagues, only a tiny fraction become professional athletes. Nonetheless, NBA basketball player Lual Deng encourages young players to go all in.
If we look at things that way with small percentages, I think that none of us would ever take a risk to become somebody. I think for us is we want to put these kids in a position where these percentages or these chances improve. I think that it's really to tell a kid don't do something because you have a small percentage is really stupid. I think that for us, it's really teaching these kids and spending our time together.
The Lual Deng Foundation recently wrapped up an all-South Sudanese expense-free basketball camp in the East Coast state of New Jersey. The foundation invited South Sudanese players from across the country to learn from coaches and get advice from Deng himself. Camp organizers say the community building among South Sudanese youth who traveled from across the United States to attend the camp was just as important as skills building.
Those are things that for the rest of your life, you build friendship and people that you trust. It's not necessarily, let's just get them to college and get them to the NBA. Obviously, that's, you know, part of the goal. But the goal is always having somebody there that cares for you and kind of you spend time that you're working on something to become somebody instead of getting yourself into trouble and hanging out with the wrong people.
And Deng says it's not all about getting into college or playing professional basketball. He says competing on teams and going to basketball camps can connect players with like-minded people who may have the same goals in life.
These kids are going to go back to their communities and go back to kids that they know and share the stories. I think we want to do more of it. We want to show examples of the kids within each communities that can really be great at basketball just with spending time with them. And hopefully this is not just going to be basketball. Hopefully we want to set up workshop where we want to highlight people that are doing a lot of great things, but be able to kind of bring people together to work together.
The Lual Deng Foundation says their goal is to establish more basketball camps for young South Sudanese players in the future as part of an initiative to build a sense of community among the diaspora. For VOA News, I'm Ayan Bior in Washington.
That's our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with the song Zawaj Rally by Sultan Clinton. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Rushkan Mafia Zawaja Mafia Fitini
Anagini dugu telephone tabetomon Anagumuru afibeta butongo Kalita derushono Anakeli mugale Anaderusu zana tai Aina na pekarena Anakeli mugurus mafe Zawaja diga gali Anabamulu shunu Mama Urusha makipaya Maradero ana Abuto kali kalama Oh, 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 yeah, mama, and I'm here, oh, 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 yeah, papa.
Kana sanin jaka waja jaja wajira man bara da beser tamam lakin kari ne ajar ya ajo zuru 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 garami tala ni charta ke da to bitala biya an kolde gurushto mama dar gurushto ara bitala ke da bishi kale
mana ba bolo shuru Oh, 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 oh